Moncrief on News Talk.
I knew at that moment I couldn't work at that company anymore. I went home and updated my LinkedIn profile, and you know, obviously I didn't say anything to Stockton or Neil at that point. And Stockton went along as though, okay, now Bonnie is going to be our next lead pilot, and this is going to be great. You know, we're going to have a female lead pilot. This is, you know, this is going to play well to the media. And I just remember thinking, what is happening?
That's Titan, the Ocean Gate disaster. You can stream now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. I don't know, there's something kind of grimly ironic about making a documentary about a disaster, about a ship that looks that is looking for the Titanic.
I think it's like an unfortunately memeable disaster as it went, because like as soon as the submersible went missing, it became a kind of joke.
Yeah.
Tragic. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I think people were shocked and incredibly saddened by it, but at the same time it felt like a tragedy that normal people would never ever possibly be in, because let's face it, it was billionaires at the bottom of the sea in a submersible made of plastic, right? And it had this gallows humor as well, because of the fact that they were looking for the most infamous wreck in the sea and then became the second most infamous wreck beside it, right? So this is a really well made documentary about the implosion of the Ocean Gate Titan, which was in 2023, this huge story of the summer. And it comes from a director named Mark Munro. He's a two-time Emmy award-winning documentarian. So definitely he like knows what he's doing, and he puts together across roughly one two-hour episode this incredibly moving and terrifying documentary. And I think the thing it deserves the most credit for is its really brilliant use of sound, right? So like, obviously now I've become an expert in submersibles and the Titan disaster in the space of 2 hours. But the whole kind of point of it was that, and you know, none of this is a spoiler, because let's say we know where this is going, right? But basically, what makes that whole project unique is, in order to get to the very bottom of the sea to see a wreck like the Titanic, you need a very strong metal usually, right? And the creator of the company, the CEO, the man who one of the five who perished in the disaster, Stockton Rush, he had an engineering degree from Princeton, and thought, I could do this another way and make it cheaper and become like any other kind of billionaire disruptor. I'm going to disrupt this industry by going with carbon fiber, right? Okay. So carbon fiber is fibers made of carbon stuck together with some sort of resin. And you see throughout the 2 hours repeated testing done by him and the University of Washington and Boeing and various other people who know what they're talking about, saying, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. You see it imploding. You hear it breaking. And what you get, to incredibly chilling effect peppered throughout the 2 hours, is as a safety precaution, they included on board the submersible a number of microphones that they said would be able to record the sound of the hull, and that therefore the people on board would know if it was like coming to crunch time that we need to know, get out or get up, shall we say. And they are repeatedly playing throughout the series the sound of the multiple, I don't know how many times you hear it, but it must be hundreds, the fibers snapping as they are underwater. And Stockton Rush, the CEO, saying, no, this is totally fine. Everything is fine. This is just the hull seasoning itself. You know, this is, and that when you're watching it, like there's a sort of, why on earth would anybody get into this, feeling? Now, obviously, we know that it was a disaster, so it went completely wrong. He had absolute resolute faith that this was going to work, that this was going to change our whole concept of how we could traverse underwater and potentially open it up as a tourism market to see not only the Titanic, but many, many other things at the bottom of the sea. And of course, it ended in absolute tragedy. Now, if you're looking for a documentary about the kind of aftermath, that's not really what you're getting here. You're getting a very, very well made look at the, like, let's just say, decade long project of bringing this submersible, quote unquote, to market, as in how it was pitched, how it was designed, the kind of very checkered past with engineers hired who were then fired, with a whistleblower who you know, who blew the whistle and found that going up against a very wealthy person can be very detrimental to you and financially hazardous, as well as you fight legal battles despite the fact that you are doing the correct thing and blowing the whistle on what was a time bomb. But it lays all those pieces together. But if you're looking for a documentary that explores the kind of aftermath, you don't get too much of that. Now, the reason for that is because while there is a you know, a Coast Guard investigation and whatever going on, peppered into the documentary, the final findings of that have not actually yet been released. So it's sort of jumping the gun a little bit on that. But like, if you are interested in kind of disaster, true reality documentaries, I found it thrilling and edge of my seat stuff, and I really, really, really enjoyed it with all the kind of dodginess thrown in of watching people, you know, sink to their immediate doom.
And does it give an explanation of any sort as to why Stockton and Rush seem to want so obsessed with proceeding with this despite all the evidence to the contrary?
So the reason why he wants to proceed with the carbon fibre is because it's light. Mm. And because it's light, the argument, you know, this was quite a revelation. I'd never heard this before. But basically the argument is that prior to this, any other previous super deep sub is made of titanium and other metals that are incredibly heavy. Mm. And the real cost is not incurred so much in the creation of the sub, but rather the ferrying of it on a very large boat to and from the point of the sea where they wanted, let's say, see the wreck of the Titanic, right? So he thought by making it much lighter that they would make the saving there and therefore be able to run far more missions at a more cost-effective rate. So that's why he is absolutely resolute on continuing down this very treacherous path.
But even though he's looking at tests where the thing's being crushed and
absolutely. But he's also going down in it constantly himself, you know,
right,
and like listening to the listening to these really terrifying pop, 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 pop over and over again. I mean, that is the absolute brilliant part of the documentary. I mean, in an absolutely terrifying way, they're showing, you know, and they really ramp it up. Like, you're not only hearing the recordings of the pop, 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 pop as it's going, but they're showing you, you know, a visualized, like, computer graphic representation of the sound just going pop, pop, pop. It's very, very chilling because we obviously know it's going to end in complete and utter disaster, and it's just a case of when.
But nobody, or did anyone say to him, listen, you know, this isn't going to work.
Well, everyone who previously worked for Oceangate and appeared in the documentary definitely seems to say that they were saying that. And I will say Tony Nissen, who is the lead engineer, who comes across as a kind of mercurial character in this. He's an, you know, his interviews are sort of both damning and liberating in the same way of his involvement in this. But definitely the whistleblower, his name is David Lockridge, a Scot. He absolutely, you see, you hear a recording of a time he went up against Stockton Rush. But the kind of culture of Oceangate was, you buy into this and you nod and you agree and everything is fine, because if you in any way challenge this, you are fired. And that was the very dangerous culture, workplace culture, that ended in the tragedy and the loss of five lives.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, well, that explains it. Right, our next show is called Stick. New episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
Doesn't matter if you're a beginner or the number one player in the world. The course becomes a cathedral and you become baptized by a higher power. Most people don't have what it takes to tap into that. But a guy like you, with that physique, that's just God-given.
My wife says I'm too chunky to play anything.
Chunky?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Is that the word she used? Okay, with all due respect to your wife, that's not what I'm looking at. What I see is power.
Right, that's Stick. Have we reached a point now, James, where there's actually only one programme when it comes to kind of gentle programme, light-hearted comedies, and they just say, we'll just stick it in a chip shop next week. Well, this is about golf, it's soccer, it's whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in that vein, right? It's definitely got a certain, you know, let's say it's like another Apple TV comedy about a sort of mild-mannered American finding his way in sport.
Yeah.
Now, this time around, it obviously stars Owen Wilson, who you hear there. It's from a writer named Jason Keller, who's best known for writing Ford versus Ferrari, which was nominated for Best Picture at the Oscar a couple of years ago, but not Best Script, shall we say, and a few other movies you might know. But this is his first kind of original TV show, despite having it written on others. And it stars Owen Wilson as, forgive my Americanized translation or pronunciation of Price Cahill. He is a former, top golf player who crashed out due to familial problems of different kinds many years ago, and now finds himself working, selling clubs at a local, golf shop. Mm. And his marriage has imploded to Judy Greer. She plays his wife, Amber Lynn, who wants him to finally sign those divorce papers. His house is a mess and he needs to sell it. And one day he's at a driving range, and he hears, not to get back to the sound of pop, 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 right? But he hears the sound of somebody popping the golf ball and absolutely sending it miles down the, I don't play golf. And that he's played by Peter Dager. He plays Santi Wheeler, a young teenage, 18 kind of year old guy, who is this wunderkind at golf. But is he emotionally volatile and difficult to deal with? And right. So there is nothing in this that you cannot see coming a million miles away, right?
Yeah.
You have your grizzly, seasoned, older ex-pro. He's got Marc Maron as his former caddy, playing almost the same role he played in Glow on Netflix a couple of years ago. And then you have them trying to kind of cultivate this younger golfer and, turn him into something real. And of course, the whole point of it is it's about Price's ability to kind of re-establish his sense of self, rekindle his finances as he manages this younger wunderkind. Now, we're about kind of, I think this Wednesday will take us to the midway point of this 10 episode run. And I will say it's absolutely fine. Like, as in, if you are like the summer schedules are fairly light for new and exciting material, and that you get new material, you're getting both, right? It may not be exciting, but it's perfectly well made. Like, as in, I don't think anybody watching this will be bored, but I can't say it's an absolute knockout thing. Now, maybe like people who stayed up to watch, I think it was the Masters. I actually don't know what golf was on, last night, but some golf, right? If you are like a huge golf fan, then maybe you'll find more in it than I did. But at the same time, for me, the kind of non-golf or sporting fan in general, it just was a lot of the same thing over and over and over again, as in Santi driving the ball down a fairway, very, very, very far. And then seeming, that's kind of it. Like you have an awful lot of stock footage of him hitting a ball, hitting a ball, hitting a ball. Now, what I did like about it was Owen Wilson, right? There's a reason why 20 years ago he became a huge star in the kind of comedic vein that he pursued. He got to give him credit. He got an Oscar nomination for writing The Royal Tenenbaums, and he has appeared in a few kind of very, very highly regarded films. But like, he went this comedic line and he was very successful at it. And I guess those roles have kind of dried up a little bit. So he's turning now to TV. But certainly you get a perfect reminder of why he was such a likable, charming, affable, easygoing, laconic kind of person. Here you get all of that, but like, there's just nothing I haven't seen before in this show. Even down to the fact that Santi, the golfer, is this kind of like vaguely angry Gen Z type who picks up a girlfriend along the route who's like a vegan and uses different pronouns. And like, this show has absolutely nothing interesting to say about the kind of cross-generational discussion between Gen Z and Boomer or whatever. Like, it has nothing original to say about anything. That's not to say it's bad. It's just not great.
Okay, so there's a bit of hacks thrown in there as well.
Sure.
That cross-generational thing.
But not as funny.
Do you have to understand the rules of golf?
Not even remotely. As long as you hit it with a club and it goes in the hole and you score low, you'll be fine.
Yeah. See, you can tell from the way James spoke about that there. We're a seasoned professional there. Right, our last show was FUBAR. You can stream all episodes of season 1 and 2 now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I have an idea, but it's dangerous.
More dangerous than an out-of-control nuclear bullet train?
Good point. If cooling the magnet speeds the train up, then warming them would slow it down, right? If I could just pump something hot in there.
That's what Donnie's thinking.
The nuclear sludge. It's warm.
Yes. Open the window to the tanker car. I'll go up, grab the hose, and feed it through.
No, the train is going too fast. It will blow you off.
If I don't try, we could all die.
Well, if you do try, you'll definitely die.
Out of control, bullet, nuclear train. I'm sold already. So, the first season is the first season was about his daughter.
Right. So, FUBAR is an initialism. Actually, I guess I should say it stands for, in military terms, effed up beyond all recognition or something like that, right? And this is created by Nick Santoro, who also made Reacher, and I absolutely love Reacher. I think Reacher is funny and silly and camp. And like, just it's great. Like, it's really, really, really good. And it's obviously based on a series of novels that are very, very successful. So perhaps Nick Santoro is better able to spin gold out of pre-existing things than stuff he kind of creates for himself, right? So it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's first ever TV role, which he did at the ripe age of 75. And in it, he plays Luke Brunner, who is a absolutely fantastic CIA super spy, who's, of course, one case from retirement. And in the first season, he is sent to save an agent who is about to be burnt, only to discover that that agent is his daughter. And now they must work together and team up. I mean, I guess he's at a point in his life where they can't put him with, you know, like a young, sexy spy as a romantic interest.
Yeah, we know where the line lies now. Right? Yeah. So 70s, maybe not. 60,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So it said she's his daughter. Hmm. And then they build around them a team of kind of like quirky CIA spies and different like tech geniuses, etc. You have Milan Carter as Barry, who's the tech guy. You have Fortune Feimster as Rue, who is, I don't know, the wisecracking one. You have Travis Van Winkle as Alden, the hunk, basically. And into this second season, perhaps the biggest introduction is Carrie-Anne Moss of The Matrix fame, who plays Greta Nelson, an East German spy. Despite the fact that East Germany hasn't existed since 1989, but whatever, right? Anyway.
Is it set in that time?
No, not at all. It's set in contemporary time.
What? Right.
So, all in, again, this is not good, right?
Yeah.
It is trying to kind of, I guess, build on Schwarzenegger's actually quite good comedic charms. I mean, it would be wrong to say he doesn't have comedic bones in his repertoire. He definitely does. And this is going for a True Lies style action comedy stuff. Mm. It also stars as his daughter, Monica Barbaro, who people will know if they saw A Complete Unknown, where she played Joan Baez and got herself an Academy Award nomination this year, right? Now, I imagine she's ready to leave the project ASAP. But Again, not good at all. Like, this is bad. It is silly. The jokes are really cheesy. The action is kind of by the book, by the numbers. But did I find it charming in parts as well? Yes. Is it because I'm on my summer holidays? Potentially. Was I watching it at 1.5 speed in order to really mainline it as quickly as possible? Definitely. But like, I must say, I didn't hate it by any means. I thought it was kind of just naff enough to be kind of enjoyable.
Yeah. But as a vehicle for Schwarzenegger, like, and if, say, one was to compare that to his 80s films, it's probably pretty much the same.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I mean, look, are his arms as chiseled as they once were? Probably not. But is he definitely the leading man who wants all the screen time that he can get? 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That golf show is a total ripoff of Happy Gilmore.
Oh, completely.
Says Gordon. Okay. We're being honest. Arnie's back. Yes. His hilarious wooden acting has been sorely missed in these, let's face it, pretty dark times, both in the fictional and the real world. Not a love. Wilson, the volleyball in Castaway, has more personality than Owen Wilson. Ooh, that's harsh. Right, so those three shows are Titan, the Ocean Gate Disaster, you can stream now on Netflix. Stick, new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+, and we're halfway through the run of that. And FUBAR, you can stream all of seasons 1 and 2 now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.